So you can build a structure inside police units that will create ethical officers. And if that's so, what happened to the drug squad? Was that individual officers who were bad, or was it the structure itself that created the unethical officers?
Well, first of all, I don't think the officers were ever convicted of stealing. I think they were convicted of lying.
Yeah, and obstruct, that's right,
and,
yes.
And there's a fine line there to, now, make no mistake, they did something wrong. Do I know all the facts of what they did wrong? No. Does it sound, walks like a duck, talks like a duck, must be a duck? Certainly sounds like there was some big problems there. How did it get to that? Many years ago, we had an old school mentality. And when I say that, it was friends of friends who became parts of units, like-minded individuals who hurled together. And in this particular drug squad, that team had those like-minded people. And unfortunately, that low ethical standard compounds itself when you put 3 or 4 or 6 people in the same room. It seems to me, from the outside looking in, that's probably exactly what happened here. And that they got away with certain things, and they pushed the envelope a little bit further and a little bit further. And did they steal? Did they take drugs, money? Did they go to bank security deposit boxes? Maybe. I don't think the evidence was ever proven to that, but it was certainly suggested that that happened. And ultimately, they were convicted of much lesser than, 10 years would perhaps justify, or maybe it was 11 by the time it was done. So I think that has changed today, though. We no longer tape people because you play hockey with me and you are the son of so-and-so. We more and more take people based on, really, their credentials. And by doing that, you bring that diversity and that multiculturalism and all of those different values to the table. I think it's less likely that moving forward today in our environment here in Canada or here in Toronto, that we will see that. We may see 1 or 2 offs, and that's the reality of employing 8,000 people. You will never get purity throughout. But I would hope that with the systems that we put in place and with the transparency we bring in with something like a camera, is that we lower the probability of that.
Well, tapping into that, when you're saying that TPS is now a lot more multicultural than it used to be, in much better gender diversity. Do you think that ethics changes between cultures? Because Toronto is an incredibly multicultural society, and what is ethical in one community would not be ethical in another community. And how do you work as a police officer? Do you follow the law, or do you adapt to the ethics of that community in order to be successful inside that community?
Well, first of all, I've had the luxury of living all over the world, from the Middle East to Europe and everywhere in between. And I have to say that although we have a standard, I come from a military family, so we had more rules than most, but I don't know that ethics equates to corruption in these countries. Does it? In some countries it does. But I think that, and the analogy that I use to my folks is, you treat everybody like you want your grandmother to be treated, and I will know where your bar is set, and I can defend you. And the reason I use that analogy is specifically because of living all over the world. But in any culture, in any environment, whether it's Libya, Syria, Damascus, Germany, France, wherever, if you say, I want you to treat people like you treat your grandmother, no matter where you come from, the grandmother is the head of state. And if you were ever to say something foul to your grandmother, your family would hold you accountable for that, anywhere I've ever lived. Now that, I may not have lived in every country in the world, but I think when you put that is sort of, to me, an ethical bar for that sort of mindset. So to say that different cultures, different people from different parts of the world have different ethical standards, I don't disagree with that. But because I use the terms honesty, integrity, and respect, I think those are translated into any language. And I think if those people have those things at the beginning of the game, then everything else just gets better. That flower just blossoms from there. So I don't think that although we are governed by the laws, whether they're provincial, municipal, or federal laws, and what we do in the course of our day is governed by not only those laws, but the Police Services Act as well. But I think to start that off, those people that we bring into the fold need to have their own set of core values, that their own sense of honesty and integrity and respect. And if they do, I think that standard is universal.
One of the things that I'm finding interesting is, in the States, there's been this whole range of police shootings and police violence. I think that I found out that I didn't realize that in Canada, of course, we have the SIU that investigates any police action.
Mm-hmm.
But in the United States, a lot of police forces do internal investigations of any misbehavior or police action.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that has an effect on individual officer actions? They know they're going to be either investigated by an outside unit or by their own peers.
Well, first of all, and I know we always compare ourselves to the United States simply because there's the 49th parallel that divides us. But the NRA in the U.S. is a very powerful machine. They've recently published that they think that university students in Texas should be allowed to carry guns in the class to protect themselves. Their right to bear arms is the genesis, in my opinion, of the problems in the United States. So when they then put a pistol on the hip of a police officer and they say, you're going to be the sheriff in this town today, or you're going to be the officer in this city today, their mindset of what policing is somewhat different. In Canada, we put a pistol on a person's hip and we say, tomorrow you decide if you're going to take a life. Big responsibility in Canada because it's not something that is, you know, they say they have more AK-47s in the United States than they have a population. If that's true, they have some 400 million AK-47s in the United States. That's appalling to me. Gun control has a great deal to do with even the way we think about guns, even the way we think about taking a life. So you ask the question, does a governing body change that behavior? I don't think so at all. I think that, in fact, we take life very seriously and the respect of life very seriously, where in the United States of America, if you offend me in some way on my property, some states say that's okay to shoot the person then. I don't know if I agree with that.
Do you think that the fact that so many people are armed in the states influences an officer's decision about whether to shoot?
Certainly, absolutely. When there's a chance that everybody you encounter is armed, your life is always at risk. And does that make you a little more quick to pull the trigger? Perhaps it does. I'm very fortunate. I don't live in the United States of America, and I don't police in the United States of America. But I still am very careful on the front line when I'm dealing with somebody who is fidgety, who puts their hands down their pants, who is blading their body, who is displaying those characteristics that we so often refer to as an armed person, because you want to be aware of who you're interacting with and the possibility. But we also teach our people, have your finger off the trigger. And I think that's important.
Well, it's interesting that we were sort of discussing things about the officers in the United States. So in Canada, if we come back again, how do you think, or what are the indicators that cause an officer to get into trouble? What are the key indicators or key factors that would lead an officer to get into trouble?
Well, when we started policing, we were told money, women, and booze will be the three
things
that
get you
in trouble.
This is where I'm going at. This is where I'm going at. Is that still true today?
I think it is. Certainly money is always a problem. You know, if somebody is in a relationship or an environment where, you know, they've written a bigger check than they can afford, then the temptation of money in a circumstance, let's say for argument's sake, your drug squad scenario, and that person sees that and says, 10,000 is going to court, 10,000 is going to Stephen's bank account because Stephen needs it as much as he does. That's a problem. Women/and/or men today, is that a problem? It can be. I mean, any sort of intimate or personal relationship can cause problems in a work environment. Policing is not unique to that. But the glitz of the uniform is what used to be the big draw. I think, though, 30 years ago, when money, women, and booze were the big issues, there was far more respect globally for police and the person that wore that uniform. I don't know that that's the same today. So that, I think that analogy, when we were young officers, was not so much the women that you work with, but the women that you encounter on your day-to-day job. And alcohol, I think alcohol is so far less used today. I see more and more young recruits drinking Perrier than I ever see going out for a beer. We have changed the working schedule to try and alleviate that after-hours gathering, in Toronto anyway. I don't know that that's the answer either, but it seems to be that constellation of a number of things that have happened that have caused it to be a lesser evil, if you will, in policing. I'm sure, you know, I'm at that sort of age now where the young kids don't tell me what are the demons in their closet. And so I'm naive to that, maybe, in reflecting back on when we were young. But certainly money is always a problem in any environment where you have access to money, where somehow in your mind you can justify you're better suited to have it than an evidence bag for court. And I think that's where we have to be better with our people and the management of our people.
You touched on a very interesting theme, I think, there, and that's being new recruits today, being more socially active in the social networking with regards to Facebook or Snapchat or whatever, Instagram or whatever these things are these mm-hmm. days. And in saying that, in my day, back in 1974, just outside the Stone Age, if you had a nicer car than the unit commander, you were investigated by then called the Internal Affairs. But today, in order to keep this status, this demand or desire for it to be accepted by a wide range, do you find that need for social Facebooking a concern with young recruits, where they start posting pictures of themselves mm-hmm. in various regalia or less of any regalia, so to speak, semi-nude or nude pictures of them holding a Toronto Police shotgun or a Toronto Police uniform or something like that in some manner in order to increase their social networking status?
Certainly, that's a huge issue today, and certainly something that we didn't have to worry about in our day. And perhaps social media is a perfect replacement for maybe alcohol in those three things. And it's become very real in the police environment because we have what we call a link system. So it's an instant messaging between computers. And we have a large number of officers who have been disciplined for the inappropriate use of that. But what we forget as historians of policing is that where you and I would talk face-to-face and perhaps argue face-to-face and perhaps swear face-to-face, today, it's about a keyboard. So yesterday, I'd tell you to F off to your face. Today, I'd tell you to F off on the keyboard. Well, it's not allowed. But we never said that. We said, use your moral compass. Well, this is my moral compass. This is a conversation. Yeah. They no longer write a letter. Few of them today know how to sign their name properly. We've taken cursive writing out of elementary schools. So we, in policing, also need to evolve. So you bring up the issue of the postings and whatnot. You know, we say you have to have a standard, you must do this, it's always watched, it's always looked at. But there's never been a consequence as young kids on Facebook or Twitter or Snapchat, which is even worse now because it disappears in 10 minutes. They're doing things, and I would suggest that perhaps those semi-nude pictures and whatnot are now being done through Snapchat as opposed to Facebook, and now there's no tracking of that because the young inventor of Snapchat is making bajillions of dollars because he doesn't have to worry himself about storage. So they're starting to use more of these things. We are not staying quickly enough ahead of that from a professional standards lens from that. And that is and continues to create a habit within and throughout, not just policing, because it's around the world now. A police officer with a Toronto Police flash does something inappropriate on Facebook. New Zealand sees that now, not rumor of it 3 years from now. And we need to be better at that as well. And I don't know that we are. I think we're getting there, but I think we try to.